Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia. Apriremo quelle gabbie vili e co-criminali. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Whoa.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, who had Brody and Jackie talking about Hobson's Bay Council Ida Hobbit event, and we'll talk a little bit about Ida Hobbit later on in the show. Sally finished with a song, it was Jesus and His Judgmental Father. The song was Kings and Queens. And, yeah, that does actually relate to what we're discussing today. So we're discussing the documentary Christspiracy on the show today with a full studio. So we've got Lottie.
Hello.
Hayden.
Hi, nice to be here.
And Caroline.
Hello.
And, yeah, I guess Christspiracy, a little bit about the film. I feel like a lot of these spiracy films are quite vague in their description. So this is what it says about it on the website. Christspiracy is a groundbreaking documentary revealing the biggest cover-up in 2,000 years, one that will forever shape your understanding of faith, ethics, and our connection to creation. From the creator of Seaspiracy, Cowspiracy, and What the Health. So that doesn't give too much away. We'll get into it as we go. But we will start talking about, basically the documentary is in a nutshell about religion and animals. That would be the sort of general topic today. And so I thought a good place to start off is talking about maybe our own journey with religion, and possibly how that's intersected with animals. I can get mine over very quick. I guess I was brought up not religious. Neither of my parents were religious. I got a bit older. Thought a bit more about religion, was still not religious, and now I've got much older and thought a bit about it a bit more and still not at all religious. So that has been my journey.
Consistent.
Yeah, not very interesting, but Caroline, do you want to kick things off?
So I was raised in a religious family. So I was raised in the Church of England that obviously became the Anglican Church. My mum's family are Jewish, so there's interesting sort of history there. I definitely did go to Sunday school as a child, and probably until I was a teenager, and I could say I didn't really want to go. But I also went to an Anglican secondary school, so had all of that as well. Having said all of that, I actually do consider myself an atheist, and I respect people having faith, but I have a lot of problems with organized religion. I'll just put that out there.
I was going to jump in quickly. Is Anglican, is that like maybe one of the, is that a slightly more progressive than Catholicism or something like that? Or is it fairly similar? Like, I know there's different kind of strains of Christianity or...
Okay. I'll also say I am no expert on Christianity or Judaism.
I think women...
It originated with, Henry VIII, right? Oh, okay. So the Church of England originated with Henry VIII because he wanted to be able to
get them so he could divorce people.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're allowed to get divorced. Yeah. Women are allowed to preach.
Now.
I mean, I think in terms of like progressiveness in Christianity, even within things like Catholicism, there are certain sects of Catholicism that are much more progressive. And so I think it's hard to just say on a broad level, is Anglicanism more progressive than Catholicism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about you, Hayden?
I'm very similar to you, where neither of my parents is religious. I wasn't raised in a religious home, have never been religious. The first time I was ever at a church service was recently for Lottie's brother's wedding, which was in a church. Mm-hmm. Wow. That was a Catholic ceremony, so that was my first experience of a formal religious ceremony. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit of a... bit of a background in Buddhism. Like, I studied some Buddhist philosophy at university, and when I was in primary school, we had a compulsory scripture class, and I have no idea why they did this, but my parents signed me and my brothers up for the Buddhist scripture class rather than the non-religious one. So in primary school, I got an hour every single week of some dad from the school coming in and telling us stories about Buddha, so... Yeah.
And Buddhism, which is covered in the documentary.
It is covered in the documentary. Yeah. And I will say as well, just separately, I was raised in a vegetarian home. So both my parents are vegetarian. And I don't think, or I don't have any memory of that coming up in the scripture classes for Buddhism we did. But it may be just that it was such a norm for me that if it did come up, I was like, well, that's just a normal thing.
Mm. Yeah. And your parents weren't Buddhist or anything?
No,
like that.
They're not Buddhist.
Wasn't connected to vegetarianism. Mm. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was raised Catholic, I was baptized, did my first communion and confirmation, and then when my younger sister had done hers, Mum kind of gave us the choice that, like, okay, it's up to you now, you don't need to come to church anymore, and I think me and all my siblings were like, all right, well, we won't. I guess when I was still going to church, maybe when I was like a young teenager, I had like a bit more of like a interest in the, like, what, you know, what it was all about. But I think by the time I was like a mid teenager, I'd kind of, I don't know, just didn't have faith. Maybe had problems with the church already by then. So probably pretty soon after I actually like identified as an atheist. I don't know if there's really anything in terms of animals that I can really pinpoint from my childhood.
Mm. Did you guys fast for Lent and stuff like that?
No, we didn't. I think maybe my grandparents and great aunts and uncles didn't eat meat on Fridays and things like that, but I wasn't really around them enough for that to kind of impact my life or diet or anything like that.
Yep. So I do want to mention, of course, we'll be talking about the movie, so there'll be plenty of spoilers, so that's a heads up to listeners. If you do want to watch it first, then you have been warned. We do have a text line, so if any listeners want to text in, we do actually have a listener contribution I'll read a bit later, but if anyone listening live wants to text in, the number is 0488 809 855. One more time, that is 0488 809 855. And yeah, I guess we'll just get straight into discussing the documentary. Lottie, are you happy to kick things off? Is there anything you'd want to before we get into the substance of the documentary, maybe we can still start with Lottie, but maybe talk about how we found the documentary, kind of like just as a piece of art, I guess, more than
a piece of postmodern art.
As a documentary.
Yeah, that's probably not the right word, but you know what I mean. Like, just as the film. Before we get into the substance of the thing,
I had a lot of problems with the evidence base of what they talked about. I think I was very skeptical about lots of things they presented as fact. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm the target audience for the documentary because spirituality doesn't like resonate with me, but I think that is fine. But I think I don't think it was very accurate as a documentary. It's not a piece of fiction, and so it should be about accuracy. I think there was a lot that they presented as fact where Hayden and I were discussing, we were like, well, no one really knows the answer to that, or like, that's kind of presented, that's a theory, but they're presenting it as fact.
And some things like they did were just like straight up lies.
Yeah.
Like, there was quite a lot that was just straight up lies.
Yeah. Can we get an example of that?
I mean, I think one of the funniest things for me, which I just found absolutely hilarious watching it, was when they went to get a translation of something from the original in the Bible to show that the people were
murderers
and meat eaters or whatever in the temple. and they got a Bible that was in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And so if you know anything about the history of the Bible, so one, the historical Jesus was from like the Palestine region, but he wouldn't have spoken Hebrew. He would have spoken Aramaic. So one, yeah, it's a related language, but it's not Hebrew. Then the Bible was written in Greek originally, then translated into Latin. And as far as I'm aware, there's never been any Bible that was like any major Christian sect anywhere that's used a Hebrew Bible. So they,
this is the New Testament.
This is the New Testament, yeah. So the stuff about Jesus. So this bit, they got a Bible that someone had then translated into Hebrew and then got someone to allegedly translate it out of Hebrew to prove that the original Bible said something.
Well, yeah, that Jesus was calling everyone murderers instead of calling
like,
them
thieves. This is canon from the original version of the Bible written in Hebrew, and I was like, this is hilarious.
That's just not true, Yes.
I with any of that stuff, I was like, okay, I've got no point of reference. I don't know.
And a lot of people won't have a point of reference. So I think it's it's not good to put out a documentary that's got so much, so many untruths in it, like regardless of whether you agree with its message or not.
Yeah, I think it's fitting that it's got the like the conspiracy kind of title because it feels a lot like conspiracy theories where there's a lot of misinformation, twisting the truth, using straight up lies and just misinforming to kind of create the idea of a narrative that doesn't exist, I think. And as Lottie said, like maybe we in this room weren't the target audience for it. But I kind of dislike using that approach for selling veganism because I feel like you probably get people who might get interested from seeing this and then look into it and realize what they're saying is lies and get put off and think, oh, well, people just lie about veganism or animal rights and I shouldn't care about it because they're just, they have to lie to get me to believe, like to listen to their arguments. Like I don't like the idea of using conspiratorial messaging to try and get people to believe what you want them to believe.
Yeah. Like I guess if there is an actual conspiracy going on, point it out, but don't fabricate things to
make fun
of.
Yeah.
And what about you, Caroline?
Yeah, look, I really agree with you both. It's sort of disappointing because I really think that they started out doing a good job of just raising the questions about, and important questions about, I guess, religion and ethics and animals. And just when it started with Kip, the filmmaker, being asked, you know, is there an ethical way to, you know, consume animals? Well, obviously I would say absolutely not. But, you know, to explore all of that and to explore that from a religious context, given that the person that was asking the question was wrestling with their own faith because of that, I thought was a really interesting way to start the film. So, you know, and really that's all I knew about it before sort of going in. I also did recall pretty quickly, though, because Kip is one of the filmmakers of Seaspiracy and takes a very similar approach. I don't really like that kind of, gotcha kind of questioning either. Like, what's the point of grilling someone about how would Jesus have slaughtered an animal? Who knows? In fact, does it actually even matter? Like, I don't know. I don't like that style. It sort of reminds me of some of the mainstream animal rights advocacy. That is a very gotcha kind of, approach. It uses provocation, and I think that people feel that that brings people in, where I actually think it's a bit isolating. But can I just say something about that with the Hebrew translation? Because, again, I am going back in the vestiges of my mind. It's a long time since Sunday school. But my memory of that story is that Jesus is, yes, before his crucifixion, but I didn't know that this was apparently happening a few days before. I don't know. That Jesus is unhappy with what I remember to be like disrespect of what's happening in the temple. You know, the temple is, you know, a place of worship. The temple is sacrosanct. And my recollection is unhappy with, the marketplace and whatever's going on there. And I have always thought that was about perhaps the commerce and that there was unethical or corrupt practices happening there. So I do recall hearing that, you know, Jesus went into the marketplace and overturned tables and said this, you know, it's become a den of thieves. Mm. So that was my understanding or my memory of it. And I could be completely wrong, but
that was my memory too from when I went to church as a kid. I think the documentary's message was that's the story you've been told, mm-hmm. but this is what actually happened. Yeah. And we're going through historical sources to actually get to the bottom of like what actually happened in that temple. And I don't think they did it in an evidence-based way, but I think that's what they were attempting to do.
I appreciate that. I just didn't really land for me, I guess.
Yeah, I think the funniest thing about that is they're claiming that like this is part of a conspiracy to hide the animal rights message of the church. And I feel like that's a very anti-capitalist kind of story about Jesus, like, these people who are just caring about wealth and is like, you're evil people for doing that. And this idea that they changed this story from being about animal rights to anti-capitalism.
Yeah, they're okay with that message.
That's a good mainstream message that everyone's on board with.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think that people are on board with that. I think if they were going to change it from anything, they would change it from the anti-capitalist message to Jesus maybe setting up a money-changing table in the temple and being like, yeah, let's all get rich. Starting a prosperity gospel, you know.
My other big issue, and we can get into this sort of later because we need to come back to you, Nick, is the vegan washing and the portraying Israel as the most vegan country in the world. And, you know, obviously we've talked about that before and we can get into that. But, that got my back up.
Yeah.
And I did go down a bit of a deep dive last night and I was hearing – I watched an interview with the – speaking of not liking interview styles, I watched the documentary makers being interviewed by Piers Morgan.
Who generally
just asks the same question again and again. And he's like, what's your evidence? And they were like, oh, it's from a document that's been destroyed or something like that. It just didn't – it didn't come across as very convincing in the when they kind of had to justify their claim as like, oh, it's from a document that's been destroyed, but like scholars kind of generally accept that it exists, but there's nothing we can point to. It didn't sound very convincing anyway. I guess from doing the Animal Liberation Film Festival, I thought more like stylistically, I thought it was quite an engaging documentary in the way they had different, like lots of different things. Obviously interviews is a fairly standard thing, but like drone footage and different settings, that kind of thing. So I thought it was engaging. But yeah, we'll get into more of it. I guess before we get into it, though, we're going to have a song. So before we go to the song, though, Ida Hobbit, Caroline?
Yeah, so it is Ida Hobbit Day today, and it is the International Day Against Homophobia and Trans Exclusion. And I think that's important to acknowledge and, you know, to sort of shout out to the 3CR and broader community. I did also just want to quickly mention that there is a very, very cool group, the Rainbow Community Angels, and they formed and did their first action 3 years ago when there were some horrible people trying to disrupt the Ida Hobbit event and drag story time at Eltham Library. So anyway, shout out to everybody.
Absolutely, yeah, and check out of the Pan 12 till 1, check out Queering the Air 3 till 4 on Sundays, lots of shows exploring these issues on Sundays here on 3CR. So yeah, we're going to play a song which is kind of relevant to the Ida Hobbit Day. So this one is Lesbian of the Year by The Beaches. And yeah, it's basically about coming out later in life. This is actually a live version from the Juno Awards, Canadian Music Awards, where Beaches won Rock Album of the Year and Group of the Year. And this is a bit of a different version with some classical instruments in it.
Can't be your gold star, 'cause I just got this far. I can't hold your secrets, got my own to deal with. Mom thinks I'll find a man.
Do you care about older people's housing? Are you keen to talk to politicians and your community about why housing for older people is important?
Then become a housing champion with Housing for the Age Action Group. The Housing Champions program will train older people to talk about housing leading up to the Victorian election in November this year. For more information and to register your interest, go to Housing for the Age Action Group's website, oldertenants.org.au, or call us on 03 9654
7389. A 3CR supporter.
There are all kinds of reasons people end up with issues with alcohol and other drugs, and it's nothing new. Hi, I'm Professor Scott Wilson from the not-for-profit Aboriginal Drug and Alcohol Council. What always helps is to reflect on what life might be like without the substance abuse, and then take action. Step one is simple. See your GP or drug and alcohol worker and ask for help today. You can visit us at adac.org.au.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species, 3CR Community Radio. We are discussing the documentary Christspiracy about religion and animals. And Lottie.
Yeah, so in the doco, they kind of, Kip starts off by saying, oh, I've covered the environmental aspects of eating animals in Cowspiracy and Seaspiracy. Mm. I've covered the health aspects in What the Health. But the remaining question is the ethics. And they have this like Venn diagram come up on the screen of like environment, health, ethics. And then they, yeah, kind of proceed to explore major religions of the world in terms of their ethics of eating animals. I guess for me, I took a bit of issue with just completely conflating spirituality and ethics. I think that they're different concepts and they overlap, and a lot of people do get their derive their ethical framework from their religion, but I don't think it's like, maybe it was just even the Venn diagram that kind of implied that that is like the complete picture of all the reasons not to eat animals, and I kind of took issue with that approach a little bit. But yeah, like I said, I'm not the target audience of this documentary. I think it is important that, you know, there are just billions, there are billions and billions of people in the world who are religious. And so I think, like you said, Caroline, that this is an important issue to explore. Mm. But I think we can also consider, well, what are the ethics, the ethical reasons not to eat animals that are more like evidence-based or things like that.
I guess I was kind of, this is something I've covered on the show before. So we did a show back in 2020, Atheism and Animal Liberation, with Rowan Taylor. It was quite a while ago now. Ooh. Yeah, 9th August 2020. But in that we discussed an article he'd written with his partner Kim Socher, and it was titled Why Are So Few Christians Vegan? And it was a reflection on Charles Camossi's Why All Christians Should Go Vegan. So it was kind of a reflection on that. And they were kind of arguing, or maybe I'll quote from it. Applause is due to Christians who swing against the crimson tide of animal slaughter and embrace veganism. But it's difficult to escape the feeling that they were not led there by the Bible. That many were driven not by Christian duty, but by personal health motivations or the same universal ethical motivations that drive most secular vegans, empathy and a visceral sense of fairness rather than the Bible. And so I think that was kind of an interesting approach. And there was actually an example of this. This was quite a few, again, ages ago, I had to look this up. But there was a talk I heard on 3CR on the Unitarian Half Hour, which is a religious social justice show here on 3CR, Saturdays 10:30 to 11. And it was Why Animal Rights is a Social Justice Issue by Catherine Wright. Do you know Catherine Wright?
Yes.
Yeah. I believe I got the impression she was kind of part of that religious community. Yeah. And was kind of talking about veganism to that community, but it wasn't quoting the Bible. It was giving arguments just that people in general would be concerned about, that she was delivering it to a religious community which she was a part of, which made a lot more sense to me than quoting the Bible. So I guess like their argument in the article was that, you know, if you're using the Bible, you're kind of, you've got an uphill battle. And also, like, the other concern I have with using the Bible is that, again, this article, this was from ages ago, 2017, but kind of pushing back against kind of like using like the Bible to promote veganism, was kind of responding this article again, why all Christians should go vegan. And this was very from a very conservative right-wing Christian who also opposed same-sex marriage for the same reason he supported veganism, because the Bible said so, basically. So it's like, if we use the Bible as a source of evidence, not only is it an uphill battle promoting veganism, but often we might it might lead to other harmful views as well.
Great points. I will take a slightly different tact in that some of the things that I thought were quite unethical or could have actually been explored more were the conversations with senior sort of, I don't know, evangelical Christians about their relationship with huge, you know, meat-producing companies, Tyson, et cetera. I'm like, yes, yes, more of this. Come on, let's talk about, you know, how much money is being made. And how that is definitely a real conflict there, and a reason for maintaining the status quo.
Yeah, I thought that was underdone because they kind of made a connection from like, you know, one company to one religious group and kind of therefore religion in general. Like it, like the link didn't like it wasn't very spelled out, or like I felt like the point they were making was. Like the evidence they presented didn't add up with the claim they're making, I thought,
Well, I just want to, while we're on that topic of Christian groups funding meat and dairy, give a shout out to, in Australia, one of the biggest producers of vegetarian food, Sanitarium. They're a Christian group, Seventh-day Adventists. And don't know about you guys, but definitely I'm very indebted to them for so good soy milk and Wheat Bix. Shout out to those Christian groups who are producing great vegetarian or vegan food.
Appreciate their tax-free status there.
I mean, I'm like, whatever, as long as they keep making so good soy milk, I will do anything for them.
Yeah, exactly. I also really didn't like the way the film filmmakers spoke to people who were working in slaughterhouses. And I felt that was a little, I don't know.
What you didn't like how they spoke to them?
I just sort of felt that they didn't really get, I mean, of course they raised the issue of, you know, the huge harm caused by working, you know, in that sort of environment. And that's something that, you know, a lot of animal rights discussion sort of wants to steer away from. But I just sort of, I don't know.
Like it's focusing on the people, not the animals?
I think so. Even though I do think it was important to highlight that, you know, there's huge harm caused in those industries to people, and often people who end up there are not working there because they want to.
I personally thought that was quite interesting because they were kind of talking about the humane farms, and obviously, you know, we're critical of that for the from the animal standpoint. But I thought it actually kind of added to their argument that, like, when we think about like a humane animal product, we also need to think about the animals, but also the workers involved and how there was basically virtually prison labor of, like, you know, people
forced prison labor, migrant labor, paid
like it was something like some paid less than a dollar a day I think it was so like I actually kind of appreciated I think they should cover that.
I didn't really like the way they set up the interview. I don't know, it just sort of felt a bit current affair or something for me.
I feel like it was part of like the conspiracy kind of thing to it as well, where they were like, we have to blur all the faces and the security guards don't want us talking to anyone who works here. And so I feel like that was maybe part of how they set it up, where it maybe didn't,
like, feel, again, if you're skeptical about the truth of that, you might see those tactics and think, well, they're just kind of overblowing this.
But that to me seemed legitimate. Like, I feel like if you were a prisoner, you might be cautious about speaking out against it. And also, if you are a humane farm, you probably don't want people filming it either. Like,
I think the way it was done emphasized the kind of skullduggery and kind of the conspiracy, lent in the into the conspiracy aspect of it. So I can see, like, Carolyn's perspective of not being super happy of how that was conducted as well. Like, I think that it could have been still framed in a way that protected the workers, but seemed less conspiratorial, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so, something I liked in terms of, like, I as we've talked about, didn't like a lot about the documentary, but I think in terms of like using Christianity or other religions, like I think something that they tied kind of all religions to, and I guess if you were a spiritual or religious person, was that they kind of like emphasized that there was a common thread of compassion towards others across like religions, and pretty much all religions emphasize that as like one of the key things that you should have is compassion for others, and kind of their messaging that this should be extended to animals, because if you look at how we treat animals, like even if you look at like their question of like, can you kill animals in a spiritual or an ethical way, when they like look into how people are treating the animals, the answer is probably no. And like the people who actually experience it, it's very traumatic. It's very traumatic for the animals. And so like, it doesn't make sense to exclude animals from that broader message of compassion that's shared by different religions.
Yeah. And do you kind of accept that line of thinking that most religions are at their core compassion, or... or, like, that's a stated goal, I guess, whether it's put into practice is not so...
Well, I think I think it's definitely part of the messaging. Like, you know, like, I think regardless of everything else, like, the New Testament of the Bible, for instance, the main thing seems to be, like, love thy neighbor is the main message of it. Definitely, you know, a key tenet of both, well, of the religions that come from the Indian subcontinent, so Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, is non-violence or non-harm, ahimsa. I know less about Islam or Judaism's core principles, but, like, yeah, it seems like, you know, for instance, like, Islam, I do know that there's a big part of it is supposed to be, like, giving charity, to charity and giving alms and treating others well. So, like... it seems, from my perspective, that there's definitely a, you know, like Lodi talked about conflating ethics and religion. And I think it's easy to do because these religions do impart an ethical framework. And part of that is being compassionate to others, or at least certain other people. And yeah, whether or not that includes animals depends on the religion and it depends on the person. But yeah.
And maybe I'll bring in a listener contribution. I did put a call out for listener contributions. So this is from, Susan, who's a vegan and former Catholic. And she said, one point I'd like to make is that Jesus, who is proclaimed to preach love, kindness, and respect, why then would he create non-human animals with sentience, being able to feel pain and suffer? If you are a believer, how do you then justify the slaughter of innocent sentient beings and align it with your faith? Which is kind of, I guess what they're asking, which probably isn't a question that makes a lot of sense to us, but I guess if you do take a more kind of literal interpretation of like, yeah, God created everything, that I think that's a fair question in terms of why, you know, what if they were kind of meant to eat, why would he also make them sentient and capable of suffering?
Great point.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit like the old thing, like if animals had a religious framework, then humans would be the devil.
Yeah.
Because of how we treat them. So.
Or do you want to go to a song?
How are we doing? Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, let's go to the song. So let's go to your song, Lottie. So A Place in the Choir by Celtic Thunder. Anything you want to say about it?
No, I love this song, and I like Irish music, and it's about animals.
All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on a telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, a pause, or anything they got. Now all God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud.
Don't miss Future Country, the country road in NGV First Nations Commission's exhibition, now showing at NGV Australia. See new work by 8 emerging First Nations artists from around Australia who've been guided by esteemed industry mentors to present their most ambitious works to date. From weaving and photography to sculpture and possum skin cloak making, experience these powerful works in this free exhibition, open daily until 13 September. Learn more at ngv.melbourne.
A 3CR supporter. At my age, preparation is just part of life. To prepare for viruses like influenza and COVID, I get vaccinated regularly. Viruses are always changing. That's why vaccination really matters, to protect yourself against serious disease and hospitalisation. And the risks go up when you turn 65. Vaccination is the best preparation. Speak to your health professional and book your vaccinations today. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. We are discussing Cryospiracy, the documentary, and more generally religion and animals. And I'll hand it over to Hayden to kick off our final section.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to talk about, hear your thoughts about something that I'd been thinking about after watching Cryospiracy. And I guess it got me thinking about kind of the basis for abstaining from eating animals in different religions. So, like, those who know a bit about Christianity, like I talked to Lottie at the start of the show about whether her family fasted for Lent. So in kind of more Orthodox Christian traditions, they'll fast for periods of the year, including like Lent or on Fridays or whatever, in Ethiopia on Wednesdays as well. And on those days, they'll abstain from eating typically meat. They might still eat fish. In some Orthodox faiths, they abstain from any animal products. And for those, like, it seems like, oh, you're fasting. Maybe it's an act of compassion for animals, but it's supposed to be about making yourself suffer, kind of, about sacrifice and going without. And it teaches you to appreciate what you have, be more compassionate to others who don't get to eat meat, for instance. And also kind of like suffering the way that Christ did. And so it makes you more Christ-like to suffer like Christ. And apparently not eating meat is suffering, kind of like being on the crucifix, right? they're very similar. And then, you know, I was thinking,
well,
that's,
I guess, just give an example. I don't know if any of you are fans of Ethiopian food.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've got like the savory pancake like things. And I was talking about someone from Ethiopia, like, about that and how I love that I got so much vegan food. And he was like, yes, yeah, because like the strain of Christianity there has like fasting. Yeah. And that's why that, like, any Ethiopian restaurant you'll go to will have lots of vegan options, lentils and chickpeas.
Because I think about 40% of the year, Ethiopian Christians abstain from all animal products.
Okay.
So they have a lot of great vegan food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was an aside.
No, so go to an Ethiopian restaurant and chow down. in the religions kind of from the Indian subcontinent, so like Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, by comparison, if people aren't eating meat, it tends to follow from this principle of non-violence and non-harm, and the idea that there isn't really a separation between us and animals, and so you should treat animals like yourself. So it's kind of a more compassionate approach, and it kind of got me thinking about whether this influences how people in different countries or cultures kind of view the transition to veganism. Because I think a very common sentiment in, like, Western countries is that it's an act of sacrifice. Like, oh, if I go vegan, I'll be sacrificing because I won't get to have, like, cheese anymore. I won't get to eat meat anymore. I'll have to give up so much. And you kind of view it in this negative stance that kind of mirrors how Christians who are fasting view this act of as sacrifice. And like, we're all white Australians, so probably not good people to judge on this, but I wonder if in countries with a culture more based on Hinduism or Buddhism, whether people view the transition in a more positive light and don't see it so much as a sacrifice. And I can definitely say, like, when I traveled in India, even people I talked to, like, lots of people I talked to weren't vegetarian, but when I asked them about it, they're like, oh yeah, I mostly eat vegetarian, just the food's really good. Like, I don't think there's much difference between being vegetarian or not. So, like, I don't think that's quite the same as how people view it in Australia.
Well, it's definitely like a less human-centric understanding of veganism or abstaining from animal products.
Definitely.
Anything for you, Lottie or Caroline, or?
I'm not sure on that thread. Like, I agree with what you said. I think it's interesting. I think it's important to take a less human-centric approach. I'm not so convinced by, I think maybe some other Christian approaches for being or motivations for being a vegetarian might be like health based. Is that what Seventh-day Adventists is about?
You need to be healthy so you can serve God.
Yeah, and I'm like less convinced that that's such an important reason to be vegetarian or vegan. And I appreciate that in Buddhism, Jainism, Hinduism, you're acknowledging that animals deserve our compassion, basically. Whereas, I guess with Christianity, it's kind of with, the person who wrote in, maybe some Christians would just say, well, I don't believe that animals are sentient. You know, they asked, well, why would God make animals sentient?
Mm.
Maybe a lot of Christians would say, well, there's nothing in the Bible that says they necessarily are, and therefore I don't believe they are, therefore it's okay to...
I've never heard that, but I have heard they don't have souls.
They don't have souls.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have souls, and therefore they don't deserve my compassion in the same way.
Yeah.
Mm. And, I can't really argue with someone who believes in souls. I don't have evidence against that, so sure.
That's a fun one. If I sell my soul, then is it okay to torture and kill me?
Yeah,
I thought on the Buddhism angle, I thought it was interesting, and I feel like this has general kind of relevance beyond Buddhism and religion generally too. But there was an interesting point that the Buddhists made, and this was kind of consistent with the Dalai Lama as well. But they were saying that when they were going to someone's place and they were serving animal products, they were saying that the host and the comfort of the host has precedence over the animal who has been killed sometime before. And I just was thinking that, I feel like that is a common argument, again, even not in a religious context of I just don't want to, make a fuss. And I was getting back to human centric, as much as Buddhism absolutely could be or can be less human centric. It's fairly trivial human interest of not being wanting to told someone doesn't want to eat all of the food that you've served, will only eat some of it or whatever, is put, that's more important than actual the life of an animal. Mm-hmm. That seems ridiculous to me.
Well, I'll just jump in there.
I was
and say that's not actually the Buddhist position.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's how they've interpreted how they live it. Yeah,
actual rule. So there's two kinds of Buddhism, Mahayana and Theravada.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sound like they were Theravada. So they're Buddhists who still eat meat. And their thing is that you can eat meat as long as it wasn't bought prepared with you in mind. So if I rock up to my friend's house and they've already cooked a meal,
mm-hmm.
and it's got meat in it, that animal was bought and cooked and whatever regardless of me. So if they are like, do you want a bowl, it's okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to their house and they're like, oh, I'm gonna make some bacon, do you want some,
mm-hmm.
then you have to say no.
Yeah,
because then it's for you. So those Buddhist monks from this, and I just did air quotes there for people listening, from this documentary, were pretty off in terms of their interpretation of that rule. Yes.
Yeah, I think also even again beyond outside of the Buddhist context, generally, I feel like people often say that I don't want to offend the host, but I actually think in most cases, actually, this is inconvenient for me.
Yeah,
and then it feels more noble to say I actually don't want to upset the host, but I think it's just this is inconvenient for me. It's easier to say yes to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's as noble as a position as it's often made out to be.
Well, I was listening to that in the film, just thinking, all these justifications, but I have heard Peter Singer at a talk say that exact thing.
Yep, I've read it in one of his books.
If I went to someone's house,
yep.
My auntie's house, and she's made a cake and it's got eggs in it, and and I'm like, no, this is someone in your family. There's someone close to you that you should be able to say thank you so much, but I don't eat that.
Yeah, yeah. He said that we should give some weight to our own convenience, basically. And it's again, I feel like it has to be human-centric if we put that above the life of an animal. Yeah.
100%. Well, and that's the other thing. There was so much speciesism in this film, wasn't there? Yeah. But anyway.
I feel like it's actually funny because on that note, I find it's one of the easiest and best ways to decline food you don't want by just saying, I'm vegan, I don't eat that. And it's a very polite way to decline. Sorry, I don't eat that.
Yeah.
And then they can't be offended. They can't be like, oh, well, why aren't you?
Thank you for thinking of me, exactly. But yeah.
And I love that. I love that I can politely decline things if I'm like, oh, you're eating some lamb's brains? Not for me. Right? Like, not that I would ever eat that, but like, it just gives you a very polite out. So it's weird to be like, oh, well, it will really upset my hosts if I say I'm not going to eat this. Like, imagine if, like a monk came to your house and you're making sausages. You wouldn't expect a monk to eat that. It's bizarre.
I guess in fairness to the movie, I think they did kind of portray the hypocrisy of that when later on they asked one of the air quote monks, like, okay, so if someone served you dog, you would eat that. And he said, oh, well, I wouldn't. And then the interviewer said, oh, but like, what about, wouldn't you offend the host then? And then he, I don't know, did one of those, the silly things that came up a lot in the documentary where he was like, oh, cut the cameras, or like, oh, I need to take this phone call. So I don't, you know, it seemed a little silly and maybe scripted, but I, at least the documentary did kind of portray the hypocrisy of that, of like, well, if it does actually matter so much whether you offend your host, doesn't that mean you should eat any animal no matter what? You're not doing that, and why is then like a dog more important to not eat than, you know, not eating a sausage or a pig?
And that definitely was
like
a gotcha
that.
Question, so I don't know if Caroline appreciated it. But
yeah, sure. I at least appreciated that they did that instead of not doing it. Maybe, you know, I didn't like the approach in a lot of the doco, but...
On that point, it did remind me of another film that we've talked about before, the punk rock vegan movie, where they talk to John Joseph from Cro-Mags, who is a Hare Krishna, and he and others were saying that they... One of their reasons for not eating meat is that they didn't want to consume and, you know, ingest that violence. You know, that obviously the death of the animal has to be, you know, violent, and, you know, that just sort of wasn't at odds. That just didn't, you know, align with, you know, their own ethics. So I sort of was reflecting back on that, you know, hearing all of these monks say these different sort of things about, oh, well, you know, wasn't killed with me in mind. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah,
all
it's
these
like
little get-out clauses
mental
here.
Gymnastics of like, and loopholes of,
Yeah.
And it's documented that the Dalai Lama kind of goes out of his way to get people to prepare meat, but like ostensibly not with him in mind, so that he can
Heard, for instance, like I heard of him eating a dinner at the White House, and ahead of time they contacted and said they'd have a vegetarian meal for him, and he was like, no, don't make a vegetarian meal for me.
So it doesn't even seem like it's that out of
But I mean, I will say, like, with Tibet as well, like, it, like, when we look at these things, like, it's a very cultural thing. Like, Tibetan Buddhism doesn't have a strong history of vegetarianism, because in Tibet it's very hard to grow vegetables. Like, their diet is very meat based and so historically it wasn't a thing that the Buddhists could do, so they didn't develop a tradition of being vegetarian. So, like, it's a bit weird looking at the Dalai Lama as this figure from Buddhism when he's from a very esoteric part of it. He's kind of like the Mormon of Buddhism, like Buddhists, and so, like,
There's a lot of diversity.
There's a lot of diversity, and like, expecting him to be living up to these ideals is just kind of weird, because he's from this really weird sect of Buddhism that...
And just quite messed up views on a lot of issues from what I've picked up. But I guess as we kind of wrap up a little bit in the next couple of minutes, but I guess for myself, I guess my sort of final takeaway is, like, last night after midnight sometime, I was watching a video from Carnivore Talk on YouTube, and then looking into the comments, and someone, like, he was saying eating the Passover lamb was not optional, it was the law. And then someone else was saying scripture doesn't say you have to eat the lamb. Maybe he was at Passover, didn't eat it. And at the end, I was like, well, who cares, really? Like, yeah. I guess, like, I think I'm definitely not like, oh, like, I'm not interested in talking to religious people. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, you're a Christian, I'm not interested in talking about veganism with you. But I'm not going to wade into the Bible and try and make a case for it. I think there's lots of issues, like, about ethics and compassion and, like, respect for animals that are shared by people across all different religions that I just don't think going down the Bible road is the best way to go. But I guess that's my takeaway. Any final thoughts for anyone before we wrap up?
Just Carnivore Talk is the Dalai Lama's YouTube channel.
I liked but wished they'd shown more about, like, vegan activists and the positive impact of vegan activism in the world. It was kind of like a brief, like, quick rapid fire montage at the end that it left you on like a an uplifting note of like, oh, you know, like this animal advocacy, it's really important, and this has changed my life, caring about animals and doing animal activism. I think the documentary just could have done a lot more of that, brought people in with the, like, you know, compassion underlying religion kind of message, but focus more on that rather than getting into the weeds of like, was Jesus vegetarian?
I really liked at the end the, what was it, plant medicine shaman? I think it was Sunil Robles. I liked him saying that veganism is not a philosophy, it's like a state of consciousness. And I was sort of thinking, you know, maybe these are ways that we can actually sort of identify with people who have whole different beliefs to us.
I liked his quote as well, that when we like pray or give thanks, these are just justifications. We didn't hear what the animal said, which I thought was kind of interesting. That's
that was
all
great.
About making us feel better as people. But
I remember that. I thought he was good, actually. I liked him.
All right, well, we'll wrap up, and we've got a final song chosen by Hayden, which was Tortoise and the Tourist by Modest Mouse. Anything you want to say about the song, Hayden?
It's about a guy who meets a mystical tortoise that knows everything about the universe, and it's like a god, and instead of getting its wisdom, he kills it, takes it, steals its jewels, and then walks off. So I think very relevant about how religious people treat animals.
All right, stay tuned for rotations. Hear some more music. Thanks you all for joining me. I feel like we probably could have easily done another hour, but thanks everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Such a wonderful truth to hear. We get dressed as ghosts with sheets taken from the bed. Inside our socks, we hide
trash. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.